Welcome to MGO Podcast 13.9. No, I'm not going to do anything to make you fire me. No, I'm not going to make you happy either. I'm just going to stay right here in what we call the Michigan Zone.
So, congratulations to the football team to getting us all the way to basketball season, pretty much.
Well, I mean, they're not dead, but, like, we did get a lot further than I thought we would get before, you know, the Boo Birds come out and the Fire Harbaughs come out and the R's and the news and the, God, can't lose on the road to a top 10 team in this town.
Well, I mean, the nature of the way they lost was pretty upsetting.
Yes. I think it depends how much you ascribe to conspiracy theories, the boneheaded stuff at the end, just like randomness versus, bad luck or bad coaching or whatever. Like, I can't really get behind takes of like, oh, Michigan got punched in the, like the Mel Tucker take, like, oh, we punched them and they punched back and we stood taller. I'm like, no, both teams played evenly. They made mistakes. We made mistakes. Like, it was a football game between two teams, just like, you know, playing hard, playing well.
All right. Speaking of playing well, the MGO podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have three retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com or find our stuff at mgoblogstore.com. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Signal Wire, and From the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar Brothers Podcast and Prentice 4M. Where we are usually, but we have a bit of a COVID issue. So,
yeah, my kid's school got canceled for this week, but we are hopeful we're all getting tested tomorrow. We're hopeful to all be back in this week. Yeah.
Yep. So, back to the exact way in this, which this game got lost, is you just have to look at Michigan shooting itself in the foot over and over again. And I think the most grading thing was Michigan repeatedly tried to substitute when Michigan State wasn't substituting.
Yeah.
Three illegal substitution penalties. And what's worse, they were not set on a number of plays that resulted in easy touchdowns. So, you know, the play after Michigan State gets that fourth and one conversion by throwing it downfield, like, Dax Hill makes a great play to like track that down and prevent a touchdown. And then Michigan tries to substitute, Michigan State goes tempo, Michigan's not set, and it's an easy touchdown. And this is, I mean,
the program doesn't know tempo. It's just tempo. Like, it's just right. Tempo. I mean, it's not like there's hard rules for it. Every single team, every single defense deals with tempo. And
yeah, and well, except Michigan. Michigan is the worst tempo team in America. Because when they tried to go tempo themselves, what did they get? They got A.J. Henning trying to block a linebacker,
mm-hmm.
and then they got stuffed because the stuff they do when they go tempo doesn't make any sense. Like, if you're going to do that, it's third and one. Just sneak the ball.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so their tempo is complete nonsense. And then defensively, I mean, this is the cost of hiring a 34-year-old NFL guy, right?
Yeah, I don't know how much it's on McDonald because this has just been a program issue for so long.
Sure. I mean, like, honestly, it traces back to Jim Harbaugh at this point where tempo, they can't handle it. And it's difficult for anybody to handle it. But the egregiousness of what happened here, because the long Walker touchdown was, again, tempo. And you've got Chris Jenkins getting out of his gap and then Michigan is not able to react. And it's just been a consistent issue. And so I think you can ascribe a lot of the loss to that. And then, you know, there's Michigan, like, they get a holding call when it would have been first and goal from probably the 4.
Yeah, I can't be that mad about that, because that was one of those things where, like, the receivers are both kind of grabbing onto each other, and it's kind of mutual, like, you know, you're not going anywhere, I'm not going anywhere. And, yes, it's a hold, so it's not, like, going to end up as a ref minus in the charting, but, like, they never call that. And they didn't call that on Michigan State on, you know, on their big long touchdown either.
So, no, like, and then you have the sequence where – so there's the tempo that gets stuffed, and then they go for it on fourth and one, and there's a false start,
mm-hmm.
and then the ensuing punt is bobbled by Brad Robbins, and so instead of going in for points, they give the Michigan State the ball back at the 40 or whatever,
right?
And they just there's just a lot of errors that add up over time, and Michigan did a lot of good things in this game, but it added up to a loss for a lot of reasons. And we do have to mention the fact that they overturned a strip sack touchdown.
Insanely. Like,
no, for no good reason. Like,
yeah.
if anything, the visual evidence suggested that the ball was out. It's clearly not something you can overturn. They overturn it. Everybody else is complaining about the rest of the reviews. I thought those were correct calls.
I disagree on one of those catches. That catch where the guy like dug it out, if you watch it, and I just went back and saw it again, if you're watching it in real time, it's obvious that the ball bounces back into his chest. If you slow it down, it looks like his hands are underneath it. But the ball like very clearly hits the ground. Some dirt comes up, and then the ball bounces into his chest. And they overturned that one, too. That was called no good on the field, because live, it was obvious that the ball bounces the way a ball bounces when it hits the ground.
Yeah. All right, well, that's enough holistic complaining. Let's talk about the offense. So, you know, going into this game, I was pretty nervous about what Cade McNamara was going to do. That turned out to be the wrong take.
I mean, maybe this is like a gimmicky top five in the future, but like, can you think of a time when a player that we were, I mean, not super down on, but like, we were just like comes out of nowhere to have that kind of game?
It happens from time to time. Like, guys have games they locked in. But so he hits Andrew Anthony after Michigan gets backed up to the one, and that is a throw that's exactly on the money, doesn't take his guy off stride, allows him to turn, you know, a crossing route into a 93-yard touchdown, and he's getting pressure as he does this.
He throws it over a ref, by the way. Like, the ref is in his lane. Like, in the meantime, it's like, I mean, that is the hard window to hit.
Yeah, and so that kind of sets up a day where he has the best game of his career at Michigan. Still a couple of hiccups, like the pass on fourth down where he's going to Cornelius Johnson.
Uh-huh.
So they get man-to-man coverage, and they're running a pick route. And the guy who's, like, they throw the ball, and it could be interference maybe, but the guy who's getting picked is the guy running into Cornelius Johnson.
Right. Right, so
and
the so, other guy's open
Sanders
because
wide open
because we are the and, worst. We are the worst pick program in the country. Well, we're worse just, at picks than we are at tempo.
It's just like I just don't understand. Like, the design of the play is to get Sanders still open. So there's that, and then, you know, there is that contrast in the late shots, kind of on those slot fades where Michigan State, it's like what, the fourth and four or something, and they hit a slot fade down to the one,
mm-hmm.
and then Michigan has late up. Michigan has a third and three, and they try the same thing with Sainsville, and it's beyond him. He misses a couple of times at the end of the first half, so it wasn't completely perfect, but can't really criticize the overall performance there. That was much improved, and a great job by the offense line keeping him clean. So the passing game gets in gear. The run game doesn't get a big gain, but they have some pretty consistent gainers. And then Andrew Anthony comes out of nowhere to validate the Sklar's hot take from last week as the second best hot take in the history of the segment. We'll talk more about that then. But I mean, Anthony had the 93-yarder. He had another touchdown. He had a couple other catches where at the end of the first half, he's able to like get out of bounds very mm-hmm. astutely. And then he barely misses a spectacular sideline catch where he's going up and over a guy again, but
yeah.
his foot lands about an inch out of bounds. So that was a definite coming out party for him. I don't think anyone saw that coming except Randy or Jason. I forget who.
I mean, because he's from East Lansing.
He had this game with no catches.
he's from East Lansing, so I figured they were going to give him something in this game, but I thought it would be like an end around or whatever, like say hi to the family kind of thing. Not a, oh, by the way, we had Braylon Edwards and we've been keeping him secret this whole time.
Yeah, and with Cornelius Johnson having sort of a critical drop in a late game situation, kind of do wonder if Andrel Anthony is now the number one receiver, at least for the remainder of this year. I mean, given his performance in this game, you got to say, like, you got to give him a shot, right?
Well, and you went into this year expecting Ronnie Bell to be your number one receiver, and Cornelius Johnson is fast. I don't think he's been doing the things that Ronnie Bell did. So, I mean, you can kind of slot Andrel and see if he wants to take on that role, and that doesn't really change anything of what you're doing. I mean, the crossing route there, I mean, the first play, you know, Cade throw aside, that was a crossing route, right? That is like vintage Ronnie Bell. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if he's going to slot into that part of the offense, like they planned the offense in the offseason to have Ronnie Bell. And maybe like part of what's been missing from the passing game are things that like, oh, we don't want to try that if it's not Ronnie. That's not a throw that Cade has normally even attempted. So like if he has that kind of faith in Andrel to make something out of it and to get open, I mean, that adds an element back to the offense that we've been missing all year.
Yep. And that would be nice to see as a development, I guess, for next year. It's just like this is a 7-1 team that just lost to Michigan State, but because like it just feels completely pointless. Like football is pointless because it's like, what's going to happen against Ohio State? Well, we're not going to win against Ohio State. So what was the point of any of this?
I am not approaching the football, and it is not approaching the football to say that that is 100% certainty, because Ohio State just struggled with Penn State, and Penn State did not look that particularly. I mean, they got away with a ton of holding, but like they also gave up some turnovers and stuff. We'll talk about that with Jamie, but like Ohio State is not completely unbeatable this year.
Yeah, they are. For us, for this team, for Michigan, the University of Michigan Wolverines, it's not going to happen. They're going to be up by like 30 points.
All right.
And like you can try to tell me that that's not what's going to happen, but that is what's going to happen.
Okay. So, fine. Let's say Michigan finishes 9-3 this season with or 10-3 after a bowl win or something, or 10-3 after a bowl loss, cuz like, you know, the rest of the schedule doesn't look that hard. Maryland doesn't look that hard. Indiana is beatable, Penn State's beatable, and that's it. Right? So
yeah, but fundamentally, who cares? Like, what does it matter if Michigan beats Indiana or Maryland and they finish like 10-3? I don't care. It just doesn't matter to me anymore. I just their performance means nothing to me.
And if they'd won this game, like there are a couple breaks that could have gone their way, or like
sure,
one
yeah,
pass that, like, and then like does that change your feeling? Because like one play
against
Michigan State should not change your outlook on the entire uselessness of the season.
No, but it's just it's a useless season. It's a useless sport. There's so many commercials that like I just
oh god. Are we going to talk about that now, about Fox's broadcast? Just like, first of all, we could have had no rain if they just got
no. We're gonna move that to the third segment, I think. Do we have anything else to say about the offense here?
Yeah, Michigan State was blitzing a lot, and they picked it up. And Hassan Haskins had a couple of big blitz pickups. They gave McNamara time to do what he was doing, and McCarthy. McCarthy had that second throw to Andrel, and the second touchdown throw, that was McCarthy throwing that. But, I mean, we got to talk about his fumbles.
Well, I thought we would also save the fumbles for the third segment, because that's sort of like a what are we doing here? I guess if McNamara was in, like, the tent, as someone said online, then that's a different thing, but...
He was in the tent. No one knows exactly why. They think maybe his knee got messed up, or maybe his uniform got messed up when he had a slide on the previous drive. Or no one's really suggested this out loud, but if you're on the football field and you have to relieve yourself, that's also what the tent is for. So it could have just been that. Like, I know it feels like a holistic
football
problem,
game because the starting quarterback had to pee. Doesn't that just reinforce my...
Are you really saying that putting the second quarterback in it means you're going to have a fumble? Because, like, I think that fumble was partly on Corum just not knowing what the play was. Because he doesn't – when you watch that in slow motion, he doesn't really latch onto it. So that fumble could have been on Corum, who did not have a good game, by the way.
Well, maybe. I mean, he didn't turn around for it, so
– he does kind of look back a little bit. Like
clearly thought it was, like, a mesh point and that J.J. had the option to pull it, but I don't think he did.
No, I couldn't see anything on that play where JJ pulling it would have. I mean, they're blocking for Corum that whole play. So I'm guessing, my best guess is Corum got the wrong play call and thought that it was a play action or some sort of pull action or some sort of opportunity to pull. And my guess is it's on him. I don't think you can say, look, your second quarterback goes in and you're expecting him to fumble. Now, he did fumble the drive before, and that's kind of what made us all upset. Because, like, obviously, Cade should have been in there. But any team should expect their quarterback to be able to go in there and execute a handoff.
Sure.
I mean, the running game?
I mean, it was fine. They didn't get anything. They didn't crack anything big. But they were very close a lot of the time. They were productive for much of the day. You know, it's... I mean, you'd like to see them be able to, like, break something bigger. But... I mean, the short yardage issues are really beginning to add up in the red zone stuff, too.
Yeah. I thought it was another game. Like, there's kind of a... I have to look at UFR to know this, but, like, my sense was that Corum left a few yards on the table, just missing some bounces and whatnot. But I also saw that Michigan State was bringing their safety down rather fast. And the other thing is just, I mean, credit to Michigan State. They pursue so well. There is, on the, on Cornelius Johnson's end around, Xavier Henderson is the safety on the backside, and he gets there first. So, like, when I go to do grading, I'm, like, expecting, you know, a plus for, you know, getting a block downfield, but there's an extra safety there, so, like, my numbers don't really line up with, like, the result of the play, and it's probably because like, Michigan State's like their pursuit is just the best I've ever seen. So
yeah, we should probably give a shout out to Eric All, who had 10 catches in this game. Combined with the last game, he seems to be really rounding into that receiving tight end that he was promised to be, and he's a great blocker too. So it's good for him to have a breakout. All right, we're gonna take a break. Come back, talk about the defense.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced, co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management.
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
I'm writing a book on how to stay conscious when you drown. And if the words float up to the surface, I think I'm down. This is the first time I know I don't want the crown. You can take it now. You promised the world and brought me hanging from a string. Stuck it in my mouth, into my throat, don't need to sing. That was the first time I knew you can't kill the king. Unless you kiss the ring. Tell me.
We do have to shout out Prentice 4M, even though unfortunately we can't record there right now. They just bought Lucky's. They're trying to figure out what to do with it. And if you go on our message board right now, if you haven't done so already, please fill out their survey. You'll get $25 towards something when they do open. And we want MGO blog readers to do it so our community can actually decide what's going to go in that very cool spot.
All right. Defensively, obviously a big step back in a lot of ways. Particularly, I think defensive tackle was an issue. On a couple of like the big runs, the culprits are Chris Jenkins and Welshoff. And I understand that you want to rotate, but at some point, got to tell yourself that this is not a good idea at this point in time. Because like, I don't understand why Michigan's putting out 16 guys at defensive tackle when they are having a hard time seeing the starters hold up, right? Like,
yeah.
And so the long, like 60-yard touchdown run, that's Chris Jenkins on a stretch run going upfield of his guy and not getting into the sideline, and then there's the gap, and then dude's gone. That is a huge error, and that's something that I don't think we see either of the starters do. And now they were running a lot more of the three-man fronts instead of the 4-2-5 or 2-4-5, whatever. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. And the sense that again, this will come out in UFR, but the sense that I can make of it is that Welshoff is now like the third tackle. So if they're going to have three guys in there, they're going to have Welshoff as basically a strong side end, which is what he's supposed to do. But nothing about his play last week. I mean, it was cool that he got in, but like his cool play was spinning off of a double that he was losing by a lot. And then because he spun off of that double, then, you know, the blockers didn't know where to go. That's not like a... It was a cool play for that moment, but it wasn't like something that you kind of want to do all the time. Like, that, he's not a tackle.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they want to play that way, Morris has been fine in that role, and, like, that's kind of what you want... That's what you have him for. Like, I don't want to, like, get mad about using Jenkins, but, like, Jenkins should be your second team, not, like, a third team, not a second starter. That's what I mean.
Well, it's really strange because, like, it seems like they don't want to have guys having, like, consecutive snaps out there. And I wonder if this is something that is also kind of an NFL thing where, you know, if you're rotating guys on the defensive line in the NFL, well, they're all NFL guys. Mm-hmm. So unless you have like a superstar out there, there's not that much of a difference between them. And they all basically know what they're doing already. So you're not throwing in a guy who's never seen the field, who might make a huge critical mistake, and you're not going to get bit by that. And I wonder if Michigan just hadn't played teams that were going to bite them like that because they strength of schedule wasn't up. Now, Walker had a couple of runs where he was able to bounce outside the tackles, and he did some damage there. He did some more damage with tempo, and then there was the big long run. And then the rest of the day, Michigan held it fairly close to down. So I think a large part of his success is traceable to Mike McDonald, mm-hmm. either rotating the defensive line or being completely unprepared for tempo.
Yeah, he got Hawkins a couple times, but he's going to get your say. Like, that's how good he is. That Hawkins was not going to win that matchup. But like, other than that, a lot of what he would do, he'd bounce outside, and then he'd like fall off a tackle by Ross, who would get out there, and by that everyone could rally, except when a gap formed. And like you said, they got away with it against Wisconsin because Wisconsin's slow. They got away with it against Northwestern because Northwestern's slow. Teams that are not going to tempo you very much, it's fine if you rotate. And that got their starters to the end, and that got really high scores for Smith and Hinton. But like, Michigan State wasn't going to let you play that way, so then you just got to play. I don't understand, especially after it happens the first time, why it happens twice more. Like, obviously, they're not subbing their guys. They're rushing to the line. Don't do that. Just don't do that. Don't. Why are we at a point where we're like, it's that simple? Anyway, after the defensive line, like the linebackers, I didn't have a lot to say about them. Like, I thought Ross was fine. His blitzing wasn't as strong as it normally was.
Yeah, but they didn't really need to get a lot from their linebackers in terms of pass rush because Ojabo and Hutchinson were absolutely rampant. And this is the second straight week where Ojabo's really been able to get a plus edge rush. So he seems like a guy who's coming on. And I mean, he has this two sacks in this game, including the sack strip that wasn't. Mm-hmm. And was, I don't want to say equally terrifying as Aiden Hutchinson, but he was in the ballpark. So that's a really positive development. You know, the cornerbacks held up for the most part. You know, Turner had a couple of good plays. He had an interference penalty that was pretty obvious, but you know,
yeah,
I think you take his performance in this game. And then the Moton dropped interception like two plays before Michigan State scores a long touchdown is like, oh, it's a great play for him to read on the ball and jump it, but you gotta finish that play.
I mean, Brad Hawkins has dropped that play a million times. Like, it's another thing that sticks because of the moment where, like, because of how well Michigan State was playing and because you give up a big play afterwards, then it becomes a big thing. Just like, you know, the McCarthy fumble, it's not a big thing if it goes out of bounds. If that becomes a turnover, it's a huge deal. The second one's a turnover, so everyone remembers it as, like, this huge, huge deal. So, yeah, like, you know, you want your guys to make plays, but, like, defensive backs drop interceptions all the time.
But, like, that's not the kind of interception that you can say, oh, yeah, they drop that all the time, because often it's like they don't expect the balls coming to them. Mm-hmm. They don't. Like, this is a guy making a read and jumping a route and getting both hands on the ball. It's like, catch the ball. I would much rather have caught that one than the one he actually did catch, which was which turned into an amazing putt. I was surprised that the announcers didn't mention, like, they're like, oh, you threw an interception. That's bad. I'm like, it's third and five. Like, if he throws that ball into the ground, that's a worse outcome than having that intercepted on the one, right?
It's very true. But I mean, they got to do the turnover picture and everything. But yeah, yes. I mean, knock it down and make them punt is the preferable play. But I never, another thing I just don't get that mad about, like, a guy gets an opportunity for an interception, he's going to go up and get it.
Well, I'm going to be a little bit. Yeah, I don't know if Dax Hill really had much of a shot on the slot fade that, so it was like fourth and four or something, and they're,
fourth
they
and got five, down to one, yeah.
of, Yeah. So, I mean, at some point, do you expect him to make a play if he's really going to be a superstar, or is it just like, you know, you tip your hat to the offense there?
I mean, he's made a couple of those plays before, but tip your hat. That's a tip your hat throw. I mean, that throw is going to beat him in the NFL too. Like, that's just what happens. I don't think that he's an all world beater. I don't think he's a first rounder. But he's a third round NFL player, and third round NFL players get beat by that play every single Sunday. Like, that was just an amazing throw. And it just sucks that, like, they had that throw and we didn't, right? Like, back there's another place where the whole game could have turned.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about other stuff.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit prentice4m.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGoBlog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
It's not the energy reeling, nor the lines in your face, nor the clouds on the ceiling, nor the clouds in space. It's not the phone on the table, nor the bed in the earth. In the stable, nor your stable words. It's not the formless being, nor the cry in the air, nor the boy I'm seeing with her long black hair. It's not the open weaving, nor the
Jason! Hot, they would be innocuously fitting in on a Michigan message board.
Very hot. Very
Beth,
hot.
Give me your hottest take.
Michigan students should start burning couches because that is what the gods actually want. They have made themselves known. First of all, I don't actually see a health problem. I don't see any, like, no one gets hurt with a burning couch. Like, yeah. A couch gets hurt, right? And then afterwards...
That was my favorite Farrah Fawcett movie, The Burning Couch.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think burning couches should be tolerated to a certain degree, especially when it is, like, the number one thing that your entire town is known for. And obviously, this is what the gods want. Like, they don't want bulls anymore. They gave up on that. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, cabs, they're not into that anymore. Like,
no.
They want couches. Clearly, all they want are the couches. We should start giving them the couches that they demand.
Sofa sleepers, too, Seth?
All of them. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And it's convertible couches, too. All right, great.
Love seats. Futons,
love seats. It all
the, oh, if they could get those metal futons, those cheap futons that the college students sure. have, if you could get that metal to burn like that, then the gods would really be pleased.
Okay, good call.
That's my take.
Jason, give me your hottest take.
Michigan football and Michigan basketball and Michigan State football and Michigan State basketball have all switched souls in a 1980s soul-switching movie, and that's why we have what we have right now. So essentially...
Why is your hot take voice Grover?
Because that's all I can do for an extended period of time. So remember, like, when Beeline, like, when Zach Novak just went off, they suddenly was beating a better Michigan State basketball team with kind of regularity. Like, yes, we split some games, but it kind of mirrors what's going on with football right now in the mid, like, 2010, 12, 13, 14. So because that happened, it's sort of like a weird soul-switching, you know, 18 again, Freaky Friday movie. And that's what we're stuck in right now. Football has become basketball. Basketball has become football. And in a world where Michigan State has always been better than us in basketball, we're beating them most of the time. And now we're better than them. And then in football, it's flipped. And that's a hard pill to take. But at least it gives us something to look forward to in terms of basketball. The other thing is the people I feel the worst for in this whole situation are the diehard Harbaugh haters, because I think we're going to beat Indiana. There's a good chance we could beat Penn State and then beat Maryland. And then there's a very good chance you go 10-2 and lose to your two biggest rivals, which not enough to get you fired, but not enough to make us happy. Yes. So
it's just like the Michigan football tagline.
Right. Not enough to get someone
fired. Not enough to make you happy.
But again, if we said before the season that we were going to go 10-2, I think people would have been crazy psyched for that, even with losses to Michigan State and Ohio State. So I don't know. I mean, it's hardest on people who just hate Harbaugh, because you're going to get more of it.
Randy, give me your hottest take.
Michigan football should have hired Don Brown as an analyst for quarter 3 and quarter 4 of yesterday's game, because that probably would have saved the game for us. Even his defense would have been better than what we saw.
Oh, man, you got into, like, Groverland too in kind of the second half there. You guys need to watch the Spider-Man movie with Macho Man Randy Savage in it as Bonesaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah. I can get it up in there. We'll get it to that place. Yeah, but anyway, you know, couldn't they have hired him as an analyst? He can do it from home. You know, I don't know. I just was like,
he's currently employed by the Arizona Wildcats.
But is he? But is he really?
Is he really? You can double dip.
Yeah, I mean,
not like he's doing much for them. I mean, I think they're owns it.
They just needed a Madden kid. That's what they needed. It's like, oh, they're going hurry up. You know what that's like? No, yeah. I'm from the NFL.
Hang on, I'm sorry. I'm just substituting 8 people and getting a penalty for substituting them in. So, yeah, we need a plan and we need to figure that out. But and so much has been figured out this year. I'm gonna be optimistic and hope that we, you know, use this to bounce back in the next couple of weeks. I think a win over Penn State will go a long way. That's what we have to, obviously Indiana, but then focus on that. So we'll see.
Hey, I'm going to ask you guys this question, Brian and Seth, in the darkest hour after what happened yesterday, a winnable game that we lost. If we beat Ohio State miraculously, I'm not saying we will, but if we do, does that erase this loss and make the season feel
better? Of course, yes. I mean, that yes. erases everything. It makes every okay. bad thing in the world okay.
Okay. So this is horrible.
That's why it can't happen.
This is terrible.
It's not going to happen.
No.
Yeah, I'm not.
No,
saying,
but like,
I'm
does anyone talk about
happen.
The loss to Michigan State in 1969? You didn't even know we lost to Michigan State in 1969.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go, Seth.
All right. My hot take is, Michigan has timeouts.
Who are you saying that to, Chris Webber?
No.
No.
Oh.
And no, he's talking about getting our defensive tackles off the
16
field.
16 guys on a football field
yeah.
while the opposition is lined up.
And, yeah. Well, I mean, look, Aiden Hutchinson said in an interview yesterday, just line up and let us play. Like, yeah. Maybe some guys are going to have to be on the field for like 25 snaps or 15 snaps or 12 snaps in a row.
I like the Don Brown version of this. I like Randy's version of this better because
thank you.
Like you'll see McDonald be like, well, how do I get, how do I get Whitley on the field? And Brown will look at him and be like, you don't put Whitley on the field. We never yeah. use a Whitley. Just,
that's right. That's
just
right.
You stick need with a, guys you who can crane. Stay on the field. Which, who were doing fine, by the way. Like, I don't think, you know, Hinton or Smith were, like, really gassed or getting gassed in that game at all. Like, yeah, man.
I don't
like,
think so either. Or Ojabo. I mean, listen, all I can say is Andrel Anthony. I know you talked about it earlier in the podcast, but I called it.
Take your lap. Take a yeah. lap.
I'm going to take a lap. I called it last week, and there'll be more predictions like that that will come true moving forward. But
second best hot take in the history of this segment.
Thank you. What was the first best?
In like March of 2020, I said COVID was going to cancel football season, and I was fine with it.
I think it was to cancel wow. the game, and you were fine with it. I think it was even more specific than that.
Yeah, the game. Oh, my God. That's, hey, listen, that's okay. Well, we still have it in the future. Love doing this segment with you guys, and we can all commiserate together. As
all right. If you yeah. need more Sklar's, check out their podcast, View from the Cheap Seats, and hit up their Patreon. They are no longer coming to town this year, but maybe next year.
Oh, we'll be back next year.
For yeah. sure.
All right, boys.
Tried to keep it as positive as possible.
I mean,
you guys are the best.
Look,
what can we do?
It's a dark week. We just got to – I mean, sometimes it's so bad that you literally are just like, let's just move on. I mean, sorry, Brian. I definitely drifted back to how you felt before the season.
That's all right.
Hey, by the way, guys, 7-5 still on the table. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye, boys.
And now your fingers right, are through your forehead.
What?
And now your fingers have gone through your forehead.
Oh, you know. Special teams – didn't have a huge impact on this game except for the Bryce Behringer punt right before halftime, which AJ Henning lets drop. And that's a 66-yard punt. And by the end of that drive, you're like, man, if that was a 50-yard punt, Michigan has a really good chance of scoring a touchdown here. And they did not. Henning didn't make up for it. He had 58 yards of returns, including a 22-yarder, so he did actually help Michigan significantly as a returner, but that one was you wish that Gabriel Peppers was still on the team.
I mean, that was such a Michigan State moment, because like, we just got hosed by the refs on the when they took away the Ojabo strip sack Hutchinson touchdown, and that was the ensuing punt. So it's just, yeah. and then that goes like that was took me right back to 2019, where like, you know, it's just the it just felt like one of the breaks were ready to go against us. But I also did not expect Michigan to come down and even, you know, and get close to scoring in that drive, and they did so.
Yeah, and then Moody kicks 7 field goals, 4 of which count.
I thought that he was letting Disney and ESPN and the SEC network know how much advertising dollars they're missing out on right now. If they only
well,
bring him in.
So, but he has a long of 38 And I think there's a lot of reasons that you can point to for the loss, but if you're looking at like one statistical thing, 4 field goals for Michigan, long of 38, mm-hmm. none for Michigan, no attempts for Michigan State.
Yeah, and we kicked on 4th and 3 and 4th and 2. Like 4th and 5, fine. 4th and 8 from their 18. Like that's when you kick a field goal. But I mean, the 4th and 2 was the one that really stuck. And the 4th and 3 was on their 8, so that one's probably even worse. That I think that one was a -1 point after they got the field goal in my expected points matrix.
The botch punt did have an impact. I should mention that.
Yeah.
They did force Michigan State to go 3 and out, and I think they lost about 10 yards on that drive. So it was important for field position, I guess. But that was unfortunate. Well,
there's another. I mean, there was one. Is that the one that dribbled a little bit too? That like I thought was going out of bounds, and then it kind of hit and rolled for Michigan just right along the sideline. Like that was kind of.
Oh. I was talking about the Robbins botch.
Oh, when he actually, yeah.
He was a yard away from getting that.
Yeah, he was. I mean, my take on that, it was one of my non-used hot takes, was that like they should have just run the fake, because like the moment that he botched it was the moment that he lost the opportunity to really get there. But I mean, it was open. It was there. So I don't know if they're going to try a fake with the punter again, but I mean that goes back to the way that Michigan runs their punt system, is that like you can do that. You have an up back who could be your lead blocker, and he's not really changing what he does on the first couple of seconds of the snap, so you know that's an option to fake that spread teams don't really have.
Yeah, so that was the special teams, and we've mentioned the field goal decisions, which they're difficult. Michigan was willing to go on that fourth down, and then they had the penalty, so it wasn't like completely out of reach, but I don't know.
I hate that this is what this program does, and this has been a Harbaugh thing for ages, where they don't make rational decisions early because they want to stay conservative. And then they go like really way on the other side when it's late. And then specifically thinking about the fade on 3rd and 3, which forced the fourth down, which they on their second to last drive, that was like right out of Charlie Weiss in 2009, right? Like that was like just trying to overthink it. Like you need 3 yards.
Well, Weiss was even worse because he was trying to run out the clock.
That's true.
He wasn't trying to score points.
That's true. That's true. I apologize, Jim. You're not Charlie Weiss. It was still like you're overthinking it. Like a fade to Sainristil still has not been a money play for Michigan, right? There's a lot of, it's not been something that we're going to make at over 50% clip. So you're taking, so the most likely outcome of that is that you're going to have a fourth down and then all the marbles are going to be on the next play, where, you know, any kind of run probably gets you at least a yard and sets up a smaller one, right? Like that, if you QB sneak right there, then, like, at least you're getting a yard and a half, right? Like, if you QB sneak when they're not expecting it, that's how Illinois did against Penn State all the time. We should just have that in the playbook instead of, you know. It was, after a game of being conservative all day, to, like, have the game resting on that just really irked me.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of complaining to go around, but we've completed our task here of complaining about it, so.
Yep. Do you want to see how bad everyone else's lives are? Because we could talk about the rest of the Big Ten with Jamie Mack.
Sure, let's do that.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or
application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGo Blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Down to the last straw in the cup. Down on the bottom. No place to go but up. Always been in trouble. Nearly all my.
Brian had to go, but we welcome in Jamie Mack from Just Cover Blog. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, Seth. You know, I'm admittedly still a little mopey in the wake of that Michigan State game, but, you know, I'll recover, I suppose. We've seen everything as Michigan fans, so.
Yeah, it hurts. It hurts in ways that I haven't entirely felt yet, because after we're done recording this, Halloween is next, and the family is all about. So let's just dive into college football, because other people just as miserable as we are, starting with miserable Nebraska, who lost 28-23 to the Purdue Boilermakers. This was at home. Adrian Martinez was 14-29 with four interceptions. Scott Frost
might be in trouble. I mean, that was probably, if not his worst game in the team photo of Adrian Martinez's worst career game, which is kind of unacceptable this far into his career to have a clunker like this. He had done a decent job all season of avoiding the turnovers en masse, which plagued his 2019 and 2020 seasons, but that was not the case. Four interceptions in this one, including one that was returned for a touchdown.
Yeah, and he got booed after that one, and I think that wasn't even the fourth.
Those boos were. Yeah, because his fourth one came in kind of garbage time.
Yeah. So
he still averaged 9.3 yards an attempt, you know, but that's neither here nor there.
Sure. But he only had 1.8 yards per attempt rushing, which I think they just could not get anything on the ground. And that's not been Purdue's strong suit this year. So that's kind of why I was throwing a whole bunch of dots after the name Scott Frost. It's like now even the thing he's good at didn't really do it for them. They kind of had to do it with Adrian Martinez, and he showed that he couldn't really he's not going to win a game with his arm, which, I mean, credit Purdue to figuring that out, too. But Purdue didn't have a problem winning off of Aiden O'Connell's arm either. He 34 for 45, 233 yards, just a lot of passes to Anthropa Bell. And,
Not very fancy or not very eye-opening, but it was just a lot of easy pitch and catch with his receivers. And they had over 100 yards rushing, sack adjusted. So they had the balance that they rarely have. And getting back to Nebraska, they just fell apart in the second half. Their drive chart in the second half went 3 and out, 2 plays and interception, 3 and out, 1st down and out, 3 and out, 1 play and an interception, and then 3 play and an interception. And that's sort of been not necessarily that kind of drive sequence, but the fact that they've never played a full game this year in all their important games. They always play like a good first half and then a crappy second half, or vice versa. And they just can't seem to put it together. And I kind of put that on the head coach and the coaching staff they just can't figure out how to string it together. You know, in his press conference after this game, Frost said the players weren't ready to play in the second half. I'm like, well, what are you doing as a coach?
That was him trying to take credit
and we can argue over the use of pronouns there. You know, he says they instead of we. A lot of coaches would be there, you know, even as they throw they under the bus. But, you know, he's always pointing at his team. And, you know, the Minnesota game a couple weeks ago, he talked about how, like, oh, he sensed like all week and even on game morning that the team wasn't as up to play as they had been in previous weeks. I'm like, well, what are you doing? That's your job. Get them up. But he says, well, it's not really my job to get them up every week. They need to get themselves up. So, I feel like if they figure out how to get out of this contract after this year, he's owed $15 million if they fire him.
No, I think we're going to hear a lot of... They hired an AD who's basically the entire reason he was hired was for him to stick around. The whole reason they hired him was to prove that Scott Frost gets to stay. And honestly, like, this team, they're a team that could come back and surprise next year. I know that, like, it sounds ridiculous still because they keep losing these close games, but it was another close game. I mean, the close games keep getting worse, right? Like, they go from Oklahoma to Michigan State, who we now know is better than Michigan, to Michigan, to Minnesota, to Purdue. Like, you're working your way down the Big Ten. Unfortunately, it also means that we don't get to talk about this insane scenario where Nebraska wins the Big Ten West anymore.
Yeah, that's definitely
possible until this.
That's definitely off the table. I think I disagree a little bit about Trev Alberts. I think he would pull the trigger in a heartbeat if he could. I think the one big hiccup is that Frost is owed $15 million after this offseason. That's a hard pill to swallow.
It depends.
But I do think you're right. I do think you're right, though. Like, if Frost had put together a 7-5, 8-4 bowl season, Trev Alberts would be like, dudes, we're on the way back, you know, we're finally winning close games, or, you know, wait till next year. You know, so I do think there was an element of what you're saying, but I think he'd fire him in a heartbeat if he could. There's a lot of stuff, you know, going on. They're not, I mean, they did for this home game against Purdue, they did a Dave Brandon buy one, get one free special. So things aren't going well there. I mean, those are the things that, you know, sort of always lead to, a coaching divorce, you know, when you're not winning and fans slowly aren't coming back. But as far as next year, does Adrian Martinez come back for another year? He's allowed to. This whole Scott Frost experience has been with Adrian Martinez the whole time. And I could definitely, I mean, you know, he's had, he's improved this year from last year. So like it's on the table that, you know, a fifth year Adrian Martinez could even be a little bit better. And maybe we don't even see any games. Like
All right. Let's not talk about the future of Nebraska anymore. I want to talk about
but I think
a real contender.
I think they're going to lose a lot of guys on defense, though. I think they're going to lose a lot of guys on defense. They've been incrementally getting better, but if they have to lose, they're going to lose like six or seven starters. That could be a big step back, in my opinion.
Okay. All right, I want to talk about a real contender in the Big Ten West, and that's Minnesota Golden Gophers 41, Northwestern Wildcats 14.
Row the boat. Row the boat to sole possession of first place in the West less than a little more than a month, rather, after losing to Bowling Green as 30.5-point favorites.
Yeah, and you know what? This game was actually within 6 points going into the fourth quarter. Minnesota had to outscore them 21-7 to kind of put this away. All right, I'm sorry. It wasn't that close. It was like, but it was within two touchdowns.
It was 20-7.
20-7. Yeah.
And Northwestern, after really not having the ball ever in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can get into how another game, there's another long stretch where Minnesota runs all the plays. But they never had the ball much in the first half, but they took their first drive of the second half and got into the red zone, and they could have cut a 20-7 deficit to 20-14.
Mm-hmm.
But they, you know, they turned it over on downs on back-to-back. Well, actually, they took a penalty, so on 3rd and 16, they actually got a nice little gain for about 13 yards or so, and then on 4th and 3, it was an incomplete turnover on downs. And from that point on, you know, it was like you said, 21-7 closing kick for Minnesota.
Yeah, they did get Andrew Marty back, who I think was their third-team quarterback at the beginning of the year, but has seemed like quite a big improvement over Ryan Helinski.
Yeah. Maybe. We talk about it a lot. I just can't believe Northwestern just never has a competent quarterback, where it seemed like for years there, you know, in the 2000s and the early 2000s and 10s, you know, it seemed like they were always having 2 or 3 year starters who are always just very, very, very sneaky good, you know, whether it's Dan Persa or Kafka or Simeon or Kane Coulter. And, you know, we're in like the third or fourth year where they just have crappy quarterback play. And they've actually still made
well,
a couple
last
big time
year was last year was pretty
that.
All right. They just, I mean, they're living on transfers right now.
Yeah, but I've said this before. Last year was all right because of how poor Hunter Johnson was the season before and has been this year.
Right.
But anyway, now we're talking about Northwestern. We're here to talk about the contending Minnesota Gophers.
Well, I think that was all there was to it. Minnesota just Minnesota balled. And the other game in the Big Ten West was supposed to be more interesting, but Wisconsin just shut down the entire offense of number 9, Iowa, who now falls to 6-2, 3-2 in conference, and Wisconsin controls their destiny still in the Big Ten West, despite Graham Mertz having a bounce back 11 of 22, 104 yard, 4.7 yards per attempt game. So Wisconsin starting to look just more Wisconsin. They also discovered a running back, Braylon Allen, I think, started this game and now is past Chase Malusi. So, they're starting to look more like Wisconsin. Like, that's starting to look like our best win, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it does look like we're heading towards, a Minnesota-Wisconsin showdown in the finale for the Big Ten West. So there's a strong chance that, you know, anybody who has a win over Wisconsin has a win over the Big Ten West champ. Yeah, I don't know how much mileage that actually gets, but I do think Wisconsin definitely has a championship-level defense. And, yeah, you mentioned Braylon Allen. Fourth straight 100-yard game. He's a very intriguing prospect. He didn't play much in September. He got some snaps in the Michigan game, and I think he even had a touch or two.
Mm-hmm.
But ever since then, he's been their primary ball carrier. And like I said, over 100 yards, four straight games. But he's like 240-something pounds. He's only 17 years old. He reclassified. He should still be in high school. He looks like he should be playing linebacker for Jim Leonard, to be quite honest. And he has not just given them, you know, this big power back, but he's got athleticism. He is giving the Badgers the big play runs that they have not had since Jonathan Taylor left. You know, they didn't get any chunk plays last year, for example, over 40 yards in their 7 or 8 games. And they only had like one or two this year. And that was against Eastern Michigan until he came into the lineup. And he's got already a very high percentage of all their big runs, even though he's only played 4 games. And the offensive line is starting to come together too. You know, remember when this year started, they had, I believe it was a right guard and a center who had no snaps really in their college careers. And the few snaps they had were at different spots. They're finally kind of getting into a groove. They also played a ton of guys in September. It seemed like I read after the Purdue game that they pretty much went with five guys. An early snap count blog post for the Iowa game report the same thing. So it looks like they finally found maybe their lineup up front as well. So, yeah, it does look like regular Wisconsin. On the defensive end, they had 10 tackles for loss yesterday, including six sacks. So,
yeah,
they were on fire.
Yeah.
And Iowa had no chance in this game. It was 17-0 at one point in the second quarter, middle in the second quarter. And Iowa only had -1 yards, but they had negative yardage total.
Yeah. Iowa took the ball. So it wasn't like Wisconsin just like took over and like had all the carries. Like Iowa got the opening snap, which like, mm-hmm. What are you doing? You're playing at Wisconsin and you want the ball? No, you do not want the ball.
Right.
You got Leo Chenal and Jack Sanborn back there. Like, you do not want that ball. You want to kick it to Wisconsin. You want to like make them feel sad about Graham Mertz. But Iowa takes the ball, and I don't think they've got their first down until almost near the end of the first half. But they also had three fumbles in this game and they lost all three. It might not have been as bad as that. It may not have been a blowout if it hadn't been for the fumbles.
Because
Wisconsin wasn't really moving the ball either. Braylon Allen, he got some yards. Like you said, he got a couple of big plays. But they really, they had a couple of dump downs to Danny Davis. They had one good throw to Chimray DK, who I don't know why they don't use him more, because he was the guy who killed us on the one drive against Wisconsin, right?
Yeah. That kid must suck at practice, because I think the same thing every time I watch Wisconsin.
I know. We all learned how to pronounce his name. We all know how to pronounce his name, and they're not using him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Wisconsin did patch together, a good touchdown drive in the first quarter to take a 7-0 lead. But the way their defense was playing at that point, I was like, I think that could be enough. And then Iowa kind of got a taste of their own medicine. Remember the Indiana and Iowa State games, for example, and even the Maryland game, where it was just like turnover, pick six, turnover, like in like seven or eight plays. And Wisconsin got a couple quick turnovers, and that helped them take it from 7-17. And at that point, you're like, Iowa's not moving the football. They haven't really moved the football all year. And
yes,
now
but like Iowa got outgained in those games, and Iowa had 156 total yards in this game. 156. Yeah. That was a shutdown.
102 of them came once they were down 20-0
late in the
fourth quarter. So every offensive stat in this ugly box score for Iowa came in garbage time, practically, pretty much, for all intents and purposes.
All right. I want to move on. I know you don't, because the next one is Donovan McCauley's Indiana Hoosiers lose 35-38 to Talia Tagovailoa. I'm never going to get it right. I'm going to spend my whole life getting this name wrong.
Well, we should all do what the announcers do. If you ever, listen to a Maryland game, and you're probably going to have to for some, film sessions coming up for Maryland, Michigan, you'll notice that the announcer is exclusively calling Aaliyah.
Okay.
The back end of his last name, Aaliyah. Everybody calls him Leah.
That's the back end of his first name. It's Talia. Talia.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, right. I'm sorry. I said the wrong. Yeah, back end of his first name.
Okay. You say it.
I bring all this up because I don't have many notes for this game. I mean, Indiana fell in a 14-0 hole. Yeah. Well,
I thought you'd be all excited about Donovan McCauley. 14-25, 242 yards, 9.7 yards per attempt, two touchdowns, no interceptions. No.
I mean, he definitely looked like he can play. I will say, from a silver lining standpoint, if you compare how quickly Tom Allen got him ready to play this game compared to, say, I don't know, the Penn State coaching brass getting or the lack of getting Taquan Roberson to play, who was an equally touted recruit a couple years earlier, that's something.
Roberson, no one thought Roberson was going to be good. We can get to him later, but like, he's like 5'11". Like, Donovan McCauley is a basketball player.
Yeah,
he's a big guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
He looks imposing out there, doesn't he? I mean, that's what, because, even when Michael Penix was, for example, playing at his best, he still looked kind of tiny out there and frail. And Peyton Ramsey was always sort of tiny-ish. Xander Demont was not the biggest guy. We're going through the greatest Xander quarterback Demon, who was in like Indiana 5 foot lineage. 9. Yeah. But
he's one of my
but
people.
I will get, yeah. I think that he did play well. You know, and Indiana fell on a 14-0 hole. Mm-hmm. But they took over the second quarter. They got a big touchdown run to start the third quarter. So they had a 17-14 lead. And, you know, a couple times Maryland looked like they were going to put the game away, and they were able to, you know, Indiana was able to score again and keep it close. And they got a great little touchdown drive at the end of the game there to get under the plus five. For anybody who had the Hoosiers, Donovan McCauley led you to a cover. So that's, you know, I'm waving the Indiana victory flag here for you guys out there.
So Talia Tagovailoa.
Who did that?
Talia Tagovailoa found a new receiver because two of his best are out. Carlos Carrier.
Yeah.
Who had both touchdowns for them, at least both touchdowns through the air. I'm not even going to pronounce the running backs' names because they were all terrible in this game. But, I mean, that...
Yeah.
They can only move the ball through the air, which is going to be kind of an interesting test. We've not really faced a team that just kind of throws it out there. And then Indiana, as far as face, you know, test to face too, like Peyton Hendershot, the McCauley to Hendershot connection. I mean, I know he threw a couple to Freifogel as well, and he had that one great catch. But the Hendershot game is pretty much the best thing that Indiana can do, and I think that. Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, Michigan hasn't really been tested by a team with a tight end. You know, they had Wisconsin so far, and that's it. So, it also, you know, also relevant for Maryland because, like, we have Eric Gall, right? Like, that's going to be an interesting matchup. Anything else to take away from this game?
No, not really. It's just a disappointing season for Indiana. And, you know, it's sad. It bugs me. I really wasn't expecting a run like they had last year, but it's disappointing because it looks like they're not even going to be able to play for a bowl game, which is just kind of a sad step back. Yeah. Yesterday, Nick Sheridan coached on the sidelines, and I hope next year he is coaching somewhere else on the sidelines, but I doubt that. But I do wonder, as good as Tom Allen has been at Indiana, if his overall poor decision-making and hiring offensive coordinators is what's going to hold.
I have to wonder if maybe back. He had kind of an older team last year, and everyone else had a young team and COVID and everything, and maybe it was a little fool's gold. But they, you know, they picked up a lot of transfers. I thought they had a shot, but everyone at the beginning of the season said the same thing about Indiana. If Penix is fine, then they're going to be fine, and he wasn't, and they haven't been. So,
yeah, they've had a lot of injuries on the back end. They haven't really played with their starting secondary all year. But it's one of those deals where like one guy's out for a game and a half, and then as he gets back in the lineup, somebody else goes out for like two games, and you know, so it hasn't been like all the backups are in, but they haven't been able to play with the same back four. And you know, they changed defensive coordinators. Mm-hmm. And when Kane Womack was in charge, you know, Tom Allen handed him the defense over. You know, Allen was in charge of the defense, and he told Womack, "We're fine, but we need you to create turnovers and sacks and, you know, havoc, as we call it in the advanced stats world." Mm-hmm. And we saw the fruit of those labors last year. And you're going to get regression to the mean, especially on the turnover part. But I think there's been some transition costs in that with the new coordinator as far as getting those game-changing momentum plays. I think there's only been one game this year where they've really had those, and that was Michigan State. And they took the Spartans to the wire, 20-15.
Moving on, Rutgers 20, Illinois 14. Rutgers plays Gavin Wimsatt for a hot moment, who was in high school the beginning of this year. I don't think there's anything else we really need to talk about except for Brandon Peters started and was kind of okay. Pillow fight at the bottom of the – and we're past Rutgers already. I don't think there's anything to learn from this game. Do you have anything to say about that?
I mean, like I wonder if they're going to redshirt that guy that they brought in, but there are no really Rutgers blogs out there to read to get any feedback or reaction to that. So I don't know.
He wants to play.
I thought that was weird. I was like, are you burning this guy's redshirt just for, you know, like, I mean, are there?
He gets four games. He can play four games. So that's one.
Right. But I was, for a second there, are they going to turn the reins over to him? You know what I mean? And I was like, okay.
good for Rutgers.
Bad for Illinois.
All right, moving on to Penn State, Ohio State, a game that was kind of close, and you know, everyone was talking about the Jarron Cage fumble recovery because college football Twitter loves a late night fat guy touchdown where his entire team afterwards is like spraying him with water and waving at him.
Yeah.
But it also kind of changed the game.
I hated everything about that. The only thing I liked about that was that both Ohio State ends whipped both Penn State tackles. And, you know, the book on the Penn State tackles going into this year, you know, whether you read like, you know, Penn State friendly blogs or national type magazines, was that best set of tackles in James Franklin tenure at Penn State. And I don't think they played well all year going back to the opener against Wisconsin. And they got whooped on that play. And Harrison and the other defensive end, Tyreek Smith, just met at Sean Clifford.
Yeah.
And that fat guy just picked it up and ran it for a touchdown.
The thing is, that was coming. Penn State fans love to, you know, complain about the officiating, but they are actually kind of on the other side of the ledger, I think, in this game, very much so. You're hearing from a Michigan fan saying that Ohio State was not getting the calls, Like, they were getting away with a lot of holding. And you saw how, like both of those guys, you know, Smith had not been able to play very much before, and Harrison has not really gotten his stats, and both of them were getting grabbed a lot by Penn State, and finally I think they just had enough. So I felt that was coming. It was interesting that Penn State was able to put up so many yards, and it wasn't on the ground, right? Like, they just had Sean Clifford slinging it, and he could not run either. He's still pretty much stuck in the pocket. So he's not the Sean Clifford that you need to kind of, you know, keep your ends back all the time. But he threw 52 passes in this game for 361 yards, held in there as long as he could. You know, Dotson's incredible. He's one of the best players in the Big Ten that people aren't talking about. But he was able to kind of spread it out to his other guys too. And, you know, we're back to that whole thing. Like, Ohio State's defense, quietly not that great this year. You know, they fixed their holes in the run game and not being able to set the edge, but, you know, they still have some holes in the passing game. And I don't want to say Michigan can exploit it, but, like, I feel like somebody maybe – no. I don't even know why I'm going to finish that, because that's just Michigan State that's going to be – that has a chance to beat them still, right?
Yeah. Well, they also play Purdue and Nebraska. I mean, I don't know what you feel about those offenses.
So if Scott Frost saves his job by beating Ohio State, I would love that. I would remember so hard.
You could see Purdue's offense though with David Bell and Payne Durham at tight end, and you know they're getting Xander Horvath back. He played yesterday, getting back to Purdue.
That's true. Yeah. Maybe.
I don't think I'm not saying any of them would beat Ohio State, but you know this. We talked about this actually in late September once they made the coaching moves and the actual strategic moves on the field, changing their style of defense. That working or not, they were going to climb the statistical ladders because of who they played. They played like what? Akron, Rutgers, Maryland, Indiana. You know, they haven't really played anybody that could bring anything to the table. Had we known going in that we were going to get a real Sean Clifford instead of the injured one that we saw against Illinois, we probably would have thought a little bit more about Penn State's chances in this one. And he like you said, he was great. He was 7 for 9 for 89 yards on third downs, seven first downs on those plays. And, you know, if you're into expected points added, he actually out EPA'd CJ Stroud. So that kind of speaks to how he came up big in some important plays. And I thought that was the reason Penn State stayed in the game, was they just played really well situationally. You know, they were 11 for 18 on third downs, and on defense, you know, they took on one of the best offenses in the country and held them out of the end zone 10 drives out of 12. They got in the red zone 6 times and only scored one touchdown. So when you add the third downs on offense and the red zone plays on defense, that's about a third of the snaps where Penn State sort of rose up, you know, to the challenge, maybe a little bit above their actual abilities, and hung with the Buckeyes a little bit.
I thought a lot of it was just they got extra time because they were grabbing on. And, I mean, the Ohio State, this year with Ohio State, they just have so many weapons that, like, if the game is close going into the fourth quarter, you're just trying to guess what's going to beat you, right? And it could be Trevion Henderson breaks a big one. That happened. There was, like, a long period in this game where they weren't using Chris Olave, and you know, to a point where, like, people are asking, like, did he get hurt? But he was out there because he had a false start. Like, that was the only reason everyone knew he played for, like, three quarters of the game. And then he comes in and he gets his touchdown. And
he had a weird, game.
Yeah.
Olave had a weird game. I think he went 0 for 6 targets on his first 6 targets. So that's probably why it felt like he wasn't in the game, because they were throwing incomplete passes, you know, to him. And you don't register sometimes when you're watching as a fan, or, you know, when you're watching any game, that like they're throwing to a guy over and over again. He's just not making catches. But, you know, I don't know what was going on there. I'd have to break down those individual plays to see, you know, if they were missed. There was one play where there was a goal line play where
he had Olave
wide open, he had Olave wide open in the slot, but he like underthrew it. They were totally on the wrong page there.
Yeah.
And there was another red zone opportunity where they were going to go for it on 4th and 1, and Trevon Henderson false started. So on 4th and 6 from the 6, they kicked a field goal instead. So some of the rising up in the red zone by Penn State was Ohio State shooting themselves in the foot. But, you know, when they kicked another field goal to go up 30-24, you know, I mean, if they had, you know, if they had added a couple touchdowns instead of field goals in the red zone, and if they had stopped a couple, you know, maybe 2 or 3 more third down attempts, you know, that's a 44-24 game, you know, instead of 30-24 with a chance to lose. So,
yeah, I just think
that's what you have to do with Ohio State. You have to, I mean, you know, you have to limit the big plays, and when they get in the red zone, you have to figure out how like hell to keep them out of the end zone. You know?
Yeah, it's
when you have athletes like Ebiketie and Nketa.
Yeah.
In the secondary, like Penn State, you've got a chance in the red zone to do damage. And they've been great in the red zone all year on defense.
All right. The last thing I just want to say about this game is that Ohio State needs to take their uniforms from last night and burn them and never, ever try to play all red again. It looked so bad.
I don't think they've ever had good alternative uniforms. Didn't they come to Michigan one year with like cherry top helmets?
And then they had like they tried to do the old fashioned. God, they had some real Nike likes to have like weird names for them and stuff too. Ohio State's uniform history is basically the one good uniform, which aren't even that good. Everyone associates them with Ohio State, and everything else they try is terrible. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was a sign that Big Red is going to knock them off because that's who they look like.
That's funny. Why can't Penn State run the football with their running backs all of a sudden? Remember 2 years ago, they were dynamic, 5.9 yards a carry. They're less than 4 yards a carry with their running backs, and they've got a transfer from Baylor as their leading ball carrier all of a sudden. Didn't they used to have like all these like recruits just coming out of their program left and right?
Yeah, Noah Cain's really the only one left. Noah Cain's the only one left out of all those 5 stars they got. And Cain has just not been himself, but I think that the line doesn't block very well for him, and they need their whole rushing offense needs Clifford to be a run threat. And right now he's not. Still certainly a pass threat, so you know, if anything, this game kind of made me a little bit more concerned for when we got to go there. Doesn't really change my thought
absolutely.
About Ohio State.
I mean, you know, absolutely. I mean, we've just watched like 6 straight quarters against Iowa and Illinois of them playing so poorly. They looked like they were going in the wrong direction. And, you know, Franklin was saying weird stuff at his press conference. You know, it seemed like a bad week for them, even in the wake of a loss. And it was a nice bounce back. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how hard they play, though, down the stretch, because they're out of the race. You know, with 3 conference losses, I guess if they win out, the New Year's 6 might be, you know, might be a destination, but that's a might be, you know, so.
Yeah, I noticed that, like, you know, whenever a coach there's rumors of a coach leaving, you get the local article about how the coach is staying because he loves such and such school so much, right? I'm sure, like, the Michigan State article about Tucker's coming out any moment now, but the Franklin one was about how he took less money to stay at Penn State so that they could put more money into building their new athletic center. And I'm like, buddy, you know how college football works, right? Like, that's every coach is going to want the athletic center rebuilt, and every place you're going to go is going to, you know, they're all in a facilities race. So that's not going to be an issue to keep. Like, if he wants to go to USC or LSU, I don't think the sticking issue is going to be, you know, I was building such nice facilities here at Penn State.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. At least our coach is staying put right now. Do you have any feelings about our game, or should I cue the music?
No, I mean, I guess I'm just a little mopey about it. You know, I thought Michigan played well, you know, and not usually when Michigan loses, it's like, oh, they played like crap here and there. And I know that they, you know, weren't that great against the run, but like I thought for a lot of the game, I thought the kids stepped up and were ready for the moment. It just didn't work out for them. So I'm just kind of bummed for them. And I noticed that this Indiana game is at night, and I noticed that we're already kind of, you know, hemming and hawing about that. So,
yeah, more than hemming and hawing. People are CCing me on their letters. All right, Jamie, yeah. I think that's enough for today. Thank you very much, happy Halloween.
All right, happy Halloween, Seth. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to MGO Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook. Public Act 102 of 2012 in Michigan prohibits trash burning of household waste from a family dwelling, with the exception of untreated paper. So if you're going to burn a couch,
do it in a secret dell.
Who's got it better than us?
No!